This episode of the Airport Experience News podcast is sponsored by High Flying Foods. The San Francisco Bay Area-based boutique restaurateur features a diverse collection of market-specific local dining experiences in airports such as San Francisco International Airport, San Diego International Airport, Denver International Airport, Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, and finally, an expanding and evolving presence in Oakland International Airport, which is slated to be complete next spring. For more information on High Flying Foods, please visit highflyingfoods.com to find out more. High Flying Foods, where taste takes flight. Welcome to the Airport Experience News Podcast. I'm Ramon Lowe, the publisher of Airport Experience News and the host of this pod. As always, please make sure to subscribe so you get all of our latest content the moment we post it. Additionally, if you haven't already, check out our library of episodes because they're all still very relevant and very informative. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher. And I'm going to keep teasing this until I am able to make the big reveal, but in the coming weeks, I will have a surprise announcement to share. And I'm actually very, very excited because I believe that once we announce it, you'll be excited too. I'll just leave it at that. Anyway, this is episode 17, and I actually finally get to chat with Bryant Francis, who is the director of aviation at Oakland International Airport. Now, there are a handful of people in this industry since I joined almost 15 years ago who I have had the absolute pleasure of actually witnessing their ascension. Bryant is one of those people. He's a great person, a great leader, and certainly someone to keep an eye out for because his trajectory is just wow. So in this episode, we talk about his beginnings and the long and somewhat circuitous route he has taken to get to this point. Here is my conversation with Bryant Francis. So I'm here with Bryant Francis, the Director of Aviation for the Port of Oakland, which oversees Oakland International Airport. Bryant, we finally made this happen. Thanks for taking the time to sit with me.
Ramon, thanks for your patience. And it's a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today.
Excellent. And also, Happy New Year. It's been a while.
Happy New Year, my friend. Thank you. Happy New Year.
So the reason I wanted to chat with you, other than being such a great guy, as we all know, and of course, being a friend, I've kind of followed your growth over the years. You know, we met, I don't want to say how long, but I will say anyway now. We met 14 years ago. You were at Boise. Then you moved on to Shreveport, then on to Long Beach, and obviously now you're in Oakland. And that's really just in the time that I've been in this industry. You know, I want to talk about your history within this industry. So I will say this is kind of be kind of like a quasi this is your life episode of the podcast, but you know what? You definitely have more story to write, so don't worry about it. Let's start from the beginning though. You know, why this industry? What was the appeal to you?
So for me, it really goes way back to when I was a toddler, and I have really a lot of gratitude towards my uncle, who worked for Delta during his years at Morehouse College in Atlanta. And my grandparents would make use of his flight benefits from time to time. And when they do that, every now and then, they would choose to take me with them. And we would travel down south, as we say, from my hometown in Pennsylvania to visit family or friends, always in Georgia, Alabama, or South Carolina. And so over the course of my early years, I just completely fell in love with everything about flying and air travel. And I knew, even though I don't think I really knew what that meant, I did know that I wanted to do something with airplanes in the future. And so I thought I wanted to be a pilot. And that's really where it all began, was those early years traveling on Delta out of Baltimore down to Atlanta, Montgomery, or Columbia.
So where was the pivot then? Where did it begin to like, okay, well, I'm going to shy or move away from the pilot approach to now actually working at the airport? So instead of the airplane, it's at the airport.
Yeah, so interesting twist there. I had the opportunity to participate in a co-op in my senior year of high school at my hometown airport, Harrisburg International. And prior to that, I really had no idea as to what happened behind the scenes, if you will, for an airport to function day to day. I just knew that they were really cool places to hang out and watch a lot of different activity happening. And it was a place that I enjoyed being. But as a result of that co-op experience, I got a bit of an understanding of what it really takes to operate an airport. And so I went to Embry-Riddle in Daytona Beach, had decided to enter as an aeronautical science major, which was the flight program. And within my first semester, I changed my mind and decided I did not want to become a pilot professionally. And then I needed to decide what would come next. And so thankfully, as a result of that co-op experience, I had something to turn to, which was aviation business administration. And there were two concentrations, either airport or airline management. And I went the airport route and have never looked back since.
So like I mentioned before, you were at Boise, you know, when you and I met, and obviously your path has taken off since then. Was it always going to be a vision for you that you had for yourself to have an executive director level position like the one you have now? Or was it just kind of, you know, just feeling your way through the industry at first? Because again, you wanted to be a pilot and now you've shifted into the airport side.
Right. And so for me, Atlanta and I go way, way back. As I mentioned in the opener, you know, Delta, I mean, everyone that's in the industry, I mean, we all know how important, how busy Atlanta is. And at that time, Delta, well, still has its largest operation in Atlanta. So I got really familiar with Atlanta really early on. And it made a huge impression on me. And Atlanta, quite frankly, remains the pinnacle for me in terms of professional acclaim, if you will. And so I've always seen myself as being the head of Atlanta one day. But obviously, that wasn't something that was an absolute or guarantee. But I knew that, you know, that meant I wanted to be an airport director. And the question was, how do I get there? Mm-hmm. And I didn't really have any specific path that I felt I had to follow. But I was very fortunate in starting my career in Atlanta and working in airport operations. And in 1996, the year of the Olympics, so that was a really exciting time to be there, as you can imagine. And I moved on to Palm Springs, where I spent about 9.5 years, and I worked there in various capacities. But that gave me a broader base, if you will, a broader base of knowledge and understanding of airports and the management of airports. And so I took that into a position in Detroit that was a very different focus from what I was tasked with day to day in Palm Springs, and things just sort of built from there. So I, during my time in Detroit, decided I would become an airport director by age 40. That was my goal. I didn't know where, but that was the goal. By age 40, I will be an airport director somewhere. And so that was my quest. And I achieved that ultimately, being named the director of airports in Shreveport while still 38 at the time.
So basically, I mean, this is an industry you just found yourself into, and your first stop is Atlanta, the busiest airport in the world. That's where you cut your teeth, or you were able to cut your teeth, I guess.
Not a bad place to get things going, to immerse myself in all things ATL.
Definitely. So you mentioned, obviously, no, certainly. I mean, you started in Atlanta and then you had transitioned, I believe you said, to Palm Springs, obviously two diametrically opposed airports on opposite ends of the spectrum. So I'm assuming, and maybe this is wrong of me to assume, but with Atlanta, was there, because as large as a system as it is, was your role more focused as opposed to when you went to Palm Springs, because it's a smaller airport, maybe wearing multiple hats, that now you have a more broad, ability to kind of learn more things?
Yeah, you're right on with that. And Atlanta being a very large organization, it's highly specialized in terms of the roles that people play there. And it would be the same at most airports of that size, the large hub category. And so my experience there was no different. I was in airport operations. I had taken the opportunity early on during my years in college at Embry-Riddle to get to know a number of people within the Department of Aviation in Atlanta. And when there became an opportunity for some temporary additions to staffing during the Olympics. I was one of the people that was thought of as a possible candidate. And so I'm grateful to those repeated efforts that I made to establish those relationships early on, which led to the opportunity to serve in Atlanta for about 7 months in an airport operations capacity. And so it was a role where I was out on the airfield doing airfield inspections and, answering calls related to the operation, whether in the terminal facility or out on the airfield. And it was a ton of fun, quite frankly, just to be in that environment during that particular time. But absolutely, when I moved to Palm Springs, things were quite different because the staff there was much smaller. The operation was much smaller. And so, yes, I did wear a variety of hats there. Ultimately, my final title there was Deputy Director, Marketing, Communications, and Air Service Development. And so I was really a one-man show for the most part. I was the name, the face, the voice of Palm Springs International Airport. And so that was an honor, and it was a lot of fun, a lot of work and effort, but very rewarding. And I think, that is really where I feel like I grew up, if you will, because I spent, again, 9.5 years there. And that's where I really began honing my skills with the marketing and air service development component of the airport, which is still really, I'd say at the end of the day, my true passion is that particular area.
It's great, especially in that position you find yourself in now. You did mention earlier that there was nothing formal in terms of like a path, like, hey, you go from here to do this and, kind of like steps along the way. So, I feel like even back then there probably wasn't anything formalized. So was there a template, I guess, or something to follow that like, okay, he or she did that by this approach, or maybe there shouldn't have been.
So, it's interesting. There was no real template for me. I just thought about all of the things that I felt would be important to have some grasp of in order to be seriously considered for an airport director position. And so I went after those career opportunities that would give me that type of exposure. Mm-hmm. And so, again, in Palm Springs, it was marketing, it was air service, it was media, community relations, and in Atlanta, it was airport operations, and in Detroit, it was something altogether different, which was properties, and I had never been exposed to the properties realm prior to my 2.5 years in Detroit, but I felt that that would be something that would be really valuable to me in having a better understanding of agreements and negotiations that go into reaching agreements. And all that goes into building agreements with the legal team. And so that proved to be a really valuable experience for me as well. And then I took that and went on to Boise, where I spent 4 years. And the time in Boise was further expanded. It really was a combination of my positions in Palm Springs and Detroit with a staff overseeing the day-to-day in each of those primary functions. So it was a building blocks of sorts, right? And Boise, I sort of saw as that final piece that should put me in contention eventually to assume a number one role at some airport somewhere.
So I think you hit the nail on the head. I was going to say something similar, which is you're basically in skill acquisition mode, right? It used to be this well-rounded person that make you.
Exactly. Yep, so, that's exactly right.
Were there obstacles along the way? There was a period, at least when I came in 2005, it's a much older group at this executive director position, pretty much across the board. They were all, not all, I mean, many were ex-military or, right. That kind of thing. And it wasn't until, at least maybe you feel differently, to me, it seems like the last 5 years, some folks have finally stepped down and kind of, I hate to say this term, but age out in some ways. Was that really the lone obstacle to getting to that position? Or Was it just, were you looking for the right opportunity?
I was really looking for the right opportunity. And it's interesting because I'll tell you that when I accepted the position in Detroit, I got a lot of looks and comments from people saying, "What are you doing? What are you thinking? You're leaving Palm Springs, you know, and you're going to Detroit." It's like a sort of polar opposite type of communities, right? Mm-hmm. But what I was looking at was the ability to learn and to have greater exposure. And for Detroit, it was a large hub operation. It was a fortress hub, which was Northwest at the time. The airport in Detroit was part of an airport authority, which was also would be new to me. Mm-hmm. And so I saw a lot of great things that I thought would benefit me in the future in taking on that challenge in Detroit. And again, the biggest challenge of all was the fact that it was something brand new that I would be overseeing, which was the properties function. So, yeah, I mean, it really for me was all about looking at what I could gain from each of the positions that I ultimately chosen for and had the ability to serve in for however long. And I've used all that I've gained in knowledge from each one of those to take me into the next position, into the next level.
Excellent. So the next thing is I want to talk about mentors. And I'm sure you have many, we all do. Just tell me about who they were and what each of them really contributed to your career.
Sure. I say there are three names, three people who come to mind. And the first is Angela Gittens. Mm-hmm. She is extremely well known in the industry. She is Director General of ACI World. And actually, she became my mentor before she realized what was happening. I picked her, not the other way around. and right, I mean, it's probably not normally the way that goes. But what happened was during my time at Embry-Riddle in Daytona Beach, again, I mentioned to you that, you know, I follow a lot about what happens in Atlanta. And I had been a subscriber to the Atlanta Business Chronicle for probably 2 years by then. And there was a story that I saw that featured Angela Gittens, the new aviation general manager of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And she was the first African-American female that I had ever seen at the level of airport director. And so at that point, I think that really is when I said, well, if she can do it, she rose to that level, right? Then I can do it too. I don't know how I'm going to get there, but I see her in that role and I can do that too one day. And so I established a relationship with her pretty early on during my college years, but it was really through her executive assistant who I'd come to know over time. And I was very involved in student activities on campus at Embry-Riddle and specifically with a group called the Aviation Management Club. And we went up to Atlanta a couple of years in a row. And each of those times, we were able to sit down with Angela and have her impart some wisdom on us and talk about the world of airports and airport management. And she agreed. She sat down with us both of those years. And there's a story that she shared with us each of those times that was all about what led her to migrating from hospital administration to airport management. And, you know, it's something that sticks with me to this day, quite frankly, Ramon. Yeah. And the moral of the story was never turn down a job before it's been offered. And what that basically means is don't count yourself out.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've all done this. We see positions that are posted and we think, wow, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
You know, I could see myself in that role, but oh, here's what they're looking for. Here's the amount of experience. And that's not me, or I don't have this, I don't have that. And so I'm not even going to apply. And so at that point in time, I think I took that to heart. I don't know if I realized it then, but that meant a lot to me, because I think that led me to go for a lot in my career over the years in the positions that I've applied for. And perhaps I wasn't, when I looked at those descriptions, I wasn't the perfect fit necessarily. Sometimes I thought I was, but either way, I was going to apply, make myself known, make my interests known, and then go through the process, learn a bit more about what they're looking for, what their expectations are, see if we are a mutual good fit, you know, me with the organization. And then if the position is offered, then I can make the decision on whether to accept that offer. But you know, to never count myself out before I've even put my name in the hat, so to speak. And so Angela has given me a tremendous amount of guidance over the last, 25 years or so. And I'm definitely dating myself now, Ramon. So she has given me an invaluable amount of knowledge and wisdom and guidance. And I can never repay her for that or for her friendship, but she's been a very important part of my entire career. So she's one of those mentors.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned that quote, what she said to you, which is great. And it's really one of the reasons that led me to want to sit down and chat with you. And you, because you kind of epitomize to me another quote, since we're sharing quotes. This one's from a poem from Robert Browning that said, a man's reach should exceed his grasp, or what's a heaven for? And that's kind of like, I saw, wow, I should really want to talk to Brian about this stuff, but that's great. So do you actually share this story with Angela? Does she remember all this?
She, we talk about it from time to time. It's funny. There was an instance where, we actually, once I left Atlanta for Palm Springs, we sort of grew apart, and she left Atlanta, not too long after that, and went on to other positions, in the industry. And we would come together again, a couple of times during my Palm Springs years, but really when I moved to Detroit. And that's when I would say our relationship really took off, was from 2006 to today. But I always followed her and all of her moves throughout her industry career. And she does remember telling our group that story way back in the mid 90s. And it really was one that, that made a lot of sense to me and has had an impact on me for my entire career.
Excellent. And I'm sorry I interrupted you, but who were the other two, mentors?
Oh yeah. So, the second is Orris Dunham. Yep. And everybody knows Orris. So he's an entry legend.
Everyone loves Orris, by the way.
That's true. Yeah. But I think I love him, if not the most, almost the most. I love that man. Probably Sylvia loves him the most. But he is fantastic, and he's done so much for the industry over the years. And for me, he's imparted tremendous wisdom, especially in my years since becoming a director. There have been instances where I've been faced with navigating internal waters, and when assimilating to a new environment and organization, or to new leadership. And he's really been a rock in offering me advice on how to approach various situations, and sometimes, how to see things from a different point of view and then have a better understanding of how to approach them. So he's been great, and we have a very special close relationship, and I value his friendship quite a bit. And the third is Ron Matthew. He's the CEO in Little Rock. Mm-hmm. And we met back in 2010 at an industry event, an air service development event called Network in Fort Lauderdale. And we quickly established a rapport. Our bond strengthened during the time I served with him on the AAAE Diversity Committee. He was chair and asked me to serve as his vice chair, with, of course, the understanding that I would eventually succeed him as chair. And he's offered a tremendous amount of guidance to me through my years, again, at the director level, and as you know, someone who is leading a dynamic organization, who has a great amount of experience at different airports, who's risen through the ranks from New York to Fort Lauderdale to Little Rock, and he's done a phenomenal job. So he's someone that I look to also in terms of modeling my career after. So those are the three, Angela Gittins, Orris Dunham, and Ron Matthews.
My next question really, and I'm going to let you choose from one of them, or you can answer all three.
All right.
Basically, your greatest moment of learning throughout your career so far, maybe most humbling moment, and maybe greatest challenge.
Sure. How about the greatest moment of learning, or maybe like an obstacle I faced along the way? So while I was at Palm Springs, actually, this was very early in my career at Palm Springs, I was tasked with developing rules of decorum for our ground transportation providers, primarily the taxi community. And there had been quite a problem with that community and how they delivered customer service, how they presented themselves to the customers. And the agency that was their official governing body allowed the airport to establish its own rules for those taxi drivers who chose to operate at the airport. So my boss, the director of the airport at the time, tasked me with developing these rules of decorum. I submitted a draft to him, which he approved, and then it went to the airport commission for their approval. And there was a lot of interest, of course, from the taxi community and several people who were pretty displeased and came to voice that displeasure at the airport commission meeting. And so imagine a room full of people, probably about 50 people in the room, me being one. And I'm sitting there and listening to all of the critical comments that are basically attacking my work, or so I thought. And I'm feeling the pressure, right? And again, I'm young, I'm green. And it's pretty early on, probably year two of my time in Palm Springs. So 1997, 1998. And so what did I do? It was certainly not my greatest moment, but I stood and I asked to make a comment, and I proceeded to defend myself and my work and stating why we were making this move. And that was the wrong move for me to have made. And I learned from that number one, don't take it personal, because it wasn't personal. They weren't upset with the act necessarily. They didn't even know who had created those rules of decorum. They just didn't like what was being put before them. And so it wasn't about the person. So don't take it personal. And secondly, because again, they didn't know who had penned it until I decided to out myself as the author. So in the end, the item was approved by the commission, but don't take it personal. And I definitely learned that I can never please all the people all the time. And both of those lessons, I'd say, remain very relevant today. So that was a bit embarrassing. I can't believe I'm actually telling this story to you and everyone who's going to be listening eventually. But that was an early lesson learned for me in Palm Springs, and one that that I still reflect on from time to time when making decisions and guiding my staff along the way here in Oakland.
Hey, we all learn from it, and we have those moments. But we're all lifelong learners. The moment we stop learning and growing, really, it's pretty much done. So I'm glad you took something away from it, at least.
Yes, for sure. And then I'd say another was figuring out how to establish a relationship with the business community in Palm Springs. Again, that was early on, but the business community there was really the hospitality community. And there was no playbook, no prescribed path. and it had never been attempted before by the airport. And so this was something that my boss looked at me and said, yes, go do that. And so I had to figure out what that meant and how to sort of break in to that world and become relevant to them and to mean something to them and to be able to offer something that was of value and become an asset. Mm-hmm. And so it took time and it was sort of trial and error, but in the end, I made a difference in the end. And when I sort of realized that was I got a phone call from a meeting planner who was representing a large association that was considering bringing a big piece of business to the Palm Springs area. And she had all sorts of questions for me. She needed answers to those questions in sort of, making her final decision. And so I gave her all the information that she required. She was so grateful and thankful for that. And when I asked her who suggested that she contact me, I learned that it was the then president of the area's Convention and Visitors Authority. And that was an organization that I really targeted early on in trying to make inroads with the hospitality community. And they had an arrangement whereby there was a local resident who they turned to as a consultant to really inform them on air service development efforts. And so that was their go-to. It wasn't me or anyone else at the airport. So that's when I knew I'd made it, because this was someone who, could be critical, but was a big believer in the destination and a big believer in providing the right type of information. And in order for him to be comfortable enough to say, Bryant is the one you need to contact. That's when I knew that I had made. I had made it. I was in, so to speak, at that moment. So that was a major victory for me, and one that I took great pride in, and took that and continued to work very closely with the community to bring even more business in, which fueled the economy and continues to make an impact to this day. So very very fortunate for having had those years in Palm Springs.
So you mentioned it earlier in terms of, Angela Gittens. Here is a woman, an African-American woman running the largest, I don't know if it was at the time, but certainly now the busiest airport in the country. So right. I'm looking across the landscape of our industry here. There's you, there's Ricky in BWI, Deborah in LAX, Kevin, Dolio, et cetera. Do you feel that there's a path forward for people of color in this industry to attain executive director level positions, at all? Or is it just a matter of maybe interest / opportunity?
I think, Ramon, it's a combination. I think that number one, people who aspire to do well, to ascend the ranks in this industry, need to see and feel and believe that they have an opportunity to do so. And so seeing people who look like them, having that as a representation is something I think makes a big impact. Again, I mentioned to you seeing Angela Gittens for the first time as a part of that article, introducing her to the Atlanta community. That's what made me believe that I could become an airport director one day. I think that there's good work happening right now behind the scenes and also very openly with the various industry associations through AMAC, through ACI, through AAAE, and really putting a focus on diversity and inclusion and really trying to have that conversation. And I think that will open up more opportunity, that will make people more open to considering a more diverse pool of candidates. And hopefully as more and more of us get out there and are visible, that will inspire more people to come our way. I think really for me being in this role in Oakland right now, you know, there are some things that, that we do as the Port of Oakland, one of which is an annual aviation day. But there's more that I could be doing and there's more that I intend to do. I mean, we need to, I think, seek out those non-traditional people mm-hmm. who maybe have no sense of what this industry is about. And, you know, to me, these are the people that we should be targeting to fuel the pipeline of future leaders. You know, the traditional channels will continue to exist and some will naturally find their way to us, but the real gold, G-O-L-D, mm-hmm. is in all the others who aren't at all focused on aviation.
Yep.
And, you know, they may not even be focused on anything more than today due to their lifestyle and surroundings and circumstances. So, so I think, and I was very enlightened by some of the things that I've heard that are happening in different communities around the country, by different airport organizations, different, business partners out there who are doing a lot in that space to open the eyes of others who may not have otherwise known we existed or all that is possible within this dynamic industry. So I'm optimistic about the future, and I want to continue to do everything I can, which means more than what I'm doing right now, to help others find their way into this industry and into positions of influence.
Perfect. And my last question, and I'll let you go, is kind of somewhat related to your answer there. You know, what do you personally do to pay it forward? You had many mentors, and I'm sure who mentored you, and I'm sure you're doing the same now, correct?
I am. I'm, you know, when and where those opportunities present themselves, I do have some people who contact me from time to time and ask for my advice, whether that be through email or the phone when they see me at industry events. But also here in Oakland, there really is a tremendous opportunity here to inspire others. And I intend to become more engaged in the community to help flip the switch, if you will, for as many of the next generation as possible to, again, turn them on to so much of what this industry has to offer. And so I think there's any number of things that can be done, but it's important to pay it forward, you know, when those opportunities present themselves and to sometimes find new ways to do so. So I'm absolutely one who believes in that. And I want to continue to make an influence on others and hopefully have more people come into the pipeline as a result of my efforts and, you know, just seeing me in my position, but also being more proactive and actively engaged in the community.
Well, Bryant, that's all I have. And I want to say thank you again for taking the time to speak with me.
It was a pleasure, Ramon. Again, thanks so much for the interest and in creating the time. And looking forward to seeing you again soon.